Welcome to Turning Point, a podcast dedicated to sharing the always inspiring, sometimes heartbreaking stories of people working in the social services profession. We'll be hearing stories of triumph over incredible odds, as well as the setbacks and challenges that people face along the way. We'll hear from people working in addiction and mental health, residential treatment programs, and community-based services, as well as some of the clients that those people serve. We'll be focusing on how to increase your impact as a professional and the role of helping people overcome their own challenges through stories of impactful moments, both in treatment and in life. We'll hear tips, tools, strategies, and resources that you can apply to your own practice starting today. Turning Point is brought to you by Enviros, a diverse social services organization dedicated to strengthening youth and families in Alberta through a unique and powerful combination of experiential, strengths-focused, family-centered programming. You can learn more at www.enviros.org. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Coulard. Hello and welcome to another episode of Turning Point. I've got a couple of apologies to make right off the bat. First of all, I apologize that it took so long to get another episode out the door. I think it's been at least a couple of months. My wife and I welcomed Hudson, our third child, to the world in late November, and that might have contributed something to the delay. Second, I also need to apologize for some of the audio in this episode. The first few minutes on Rob's end have some wind noise, and for some reason most of the audio on my end is of substandard quality. That being said, if you can push through the first couple of minutes, it gets much better, and this is one of the most important interviews I've done to date. Rob Long is a young man in his early 20s who attended our Shunda Creek program more than 5 years ago. He's since gone on to a career in the field and has some fascinating and incredibly useful insights into what it's like being a client in an addiction treatment program as well as being a professional in the field. It's well worth your 35 minutes. And I want to let you all know about an important event coming up in April 2017. Enviros and Mount Royal University are co-hosting Shifting Perspective, a conference that will be celebrating and sharing innovation and best practice in the field of addiction and mental health treatment in Alberta. Be sure to check it out at www.shiftingperspective.ca and enjoy this interview with Rob Long.
Can you give me a little bit of backstory about what brought you to Shunda in the first place?
Yeah, for sure. What brought me to Shunda? Well, way back, I had the joy of experiencing a bit of a substance use problem, which really ended up just being a coping mechanism. Didn't really know how to deal with some mental health challenges and issues with home life and kind of everything, just stuff like that. And went through a series of treatment options when I was younger, from more occasional sporadic meetings with youth counselors and group therapy staff and a range of different things like that. And nothing was really sticking. Yeah. And then through a meeting with an AHS counselor, heard about Shunda and heard about kind of 90 days and out in the woods with 9 other clients camping and hiking and stuff. And it sounded awful. And I just like didn't want to do it at all. That was something that was completely foreign to me, but it was also free, and free is pretty important, and was especially important at that point in time in my life. So I agreed to do it, and applied, and ended up at Shunda, and through my experience at Shunda. Well, it was incredible, but that's kind of the lead up to Shunda was that.
Yeah, interesting to know that you had been a part of the system already with youth counselors and other types of programs, and that none of those stuck. Looking back on those experiences pre-Shunda, what was it about them that didn't necessarily stick for you, do you think, in hindsight?
I've actually been thinking about this a lot recently, and thinking about it mostly so I can apply that learning to my professional practice. But I think a large portion of it is when you're a teenager growing up with really any challenges, you're directed and controlled so often by your school, by corrections, justice system, by these counselors. A lot of it is there's such a strong directive approach. It wasn't this walk alongside you on your journey thing. It was, let me sit across from you in this office and tell you why everyone's worried about you and why you need to clean up. And I think that a directive approach for younger people who've been disenfranchised and who've experienced all of these people throughout their lives telling them they're doing stuff wrong and that they're messing up, I don't think it works. It certainly didn't work for me. So moving into Shunda, where it's really like as horizontally structured as it possibly can be, with staff who, instead of sitting in front of you in their office, sit next to you around a fire and talk about stuff instead of telling you about stuff. And that, I think, was the biggest thing, and still is the biggest thing that sticks out about Shunda, is how equal it is between clients and staff.
Yeah, I know I've had lots of chats with Jeff and with staff up there about the power dynamics of the place, how they really work to, you know, be as equal as possible, knowing that there's certain things that staff have to be responsible for, but our traditional model of staff being experts and having to help fix clients is something they've really been working hard to avoid. So it's interesting to hear that perspective from someone who at one point was a client there, who noticed that. How old were you when you went to Shunda?
I was 18, so pretty young. One of the younger guys there.
Can you talk about some of the highlights from Shunda, things that stick out for you as kind of potent memories?
Interestingly, a lot of the highlights of Shunda were actually times when things were really, really hard or just not actually that fun in the moment. I think probably the highlight that I remember most, there's two, but the one I can really remember vividly is doing one of my final out trips with Shunda, which was kind of designed around me and another client's intentions while we were there of finding kind of where our limit was outdoors and finding where our limit was in between each other working together. And it was, I think it ended up being like minus 15, and we were camping on the top of a mountain without really realizing what the consequence would be if a storm rolled in. And a storm very quickly rolled in. And we woke up the next morning and everything was like frozen and covered in snow, and our like boots were frozen, and everything was either damp or like ice. And it was so beyond what any of us, or there was three, I think me, the other client, and then one other client who was just tagging along on that trip, so beyond anything we'd ever experienced before. And we all just started laughing. It was too much to handle. And through that experience, probably one of the bigger pieces of learning for me was that I and really everyone else are far, far stronger and more capable than we ever thought we could be, and we ever think we are. And that's something that I think that true realization of all of our internal innate strength is really hard to find without something as challenging as waking up with everything frozen in minus 15. That one really sticks out for me. I think I'll remember that for the rest of my life.
That's not an experience you can have in the therapist's office, is it?
No, not quite. I'm sure there would be a way to have that realized within a more traditional one-on-one setting, but not nearly as quickly or as effectively as that situation.
Yeah, that's one thing we kind of look at. I'm with the base camp program, and so we work with youth. Very similar capacity as Shunda, but we look at adventure and we look at the wilderness really as an accelerator of treatment, as something that provides opportunities for those kind of insights readily and in the moment. So,
absolutely.
Your perspective. What did you do after the program? So you spent 90 days and left the program. What did life look like?
It was pretty interesting, actually. Through Shunda Creek, I had this opportunity to go out and volunteer for a weekend at a a summer camp for kids and adults with special needs, and really completely fell in love with it. Enjoyed it. It was a world that I wasn't used to at all. Being surrounded by people who are there because they are interested in serving someone else, and being surrounded by people who just this like positive environment and this opportunity to contribute in some way to society, or at least that's how I felt at the time. So from there, I submitted my application to a couple different summer camps for kids with special needs. Made the mistake of telling one of the camps that I was actually in like a treatment center as I was applying, which it turns out is not what people are looking for most of the time. But this camp I volunteered at, they already had a relationship with Shanda, and they had a chance to know me on the weekend. So I got hired on by them as a whitewater raft guide, which was pretty incredible. So I think I spent 2 or 3 weeks after Shanda living in a transitional home with other recovering addicts. And from there, moved out to this camp and learned how to be a raft guide, and learned that I wanted to continue developing my passion for the outdoors and also for the human services field. So I had the opportunity to stay on with that camp beyond the summer season into their outdoor education season, and did that for a while. Eventually had this really cool opportunity to be their lead raft guide for a couple of seasons. Ended up applying to a human services program in British Columbia, diploma kind of thing, and have just recently wrapped that up. And throughout all that time, I also managed to kind of get into rock climbing a bit, which is pretty wonderful. Go on some pretty sweet climbing trips and meet some really, really interesting people that I never would have been exposed to had it not been for my time at Shanda. And now working at Shanda, which is an amazing experience and a great opportunity.
Yeah, I was gonna ask about that, because it happens, obviously, that maybe not obviously, but lots of people in the helping profession and in addictions treatment are in recovery themselves. That's no surprise, but that seems to me like a pretty short turnaround for you from being there as a client, and then a few years later having really gone through that trajectory of getting other experience in the helping profession, getting some education, and then circling back to the program that you actually kind of started the journey with. And I'm really curious about what you found most interesting or that surprised you the most about Shanda from a staff perspective, something that maybe you didn't realize as a client, or something that just kind of stands out for you now that you're seeing it through a slightly different lens.
I think that that's a good question. I think that really what surprised me the most was how much thought and effort goes into creating what Shanda is for the clients, and how much attention is paid to how Shanda kind of crafts their culture and their community, and how mindful the staff are of how they present themselves to the clients, and really how much respect is given to each client's individual process. Because when I was a client there, it flowed so nicely, and you didn't notice all of this, really all of the incredible efforts that are made by staff to make everything so synchronous and make everything work in one package. So coming in and seeing all of the background work that's done was surprising, and also is pretty inspiring.
Yeah, and it's interesting to know how hard and how much work, thought, and care goes into, especially programs like Shanda, where it is a very individualized journey. I think some programs where it's kind of a canned program where you're going to do the same thing for every client maybe has less of that kind of intentionality and mindful approach, but certainly conversation with folks up at Shanda, it sounds like it's a very individualized process.
And I think that's like such a crucial part of human services work, regardless of whether it's addictions or mental health or poverty reduction or work with people with disabilities, is recognizing just how unique each person is and just the incredible differences that define people and the similarities that bring them together, and implementing that into a program rather than having one set structure for every person that flows through your doors.
That leads nicely into, I was going to ask you if you had two sets of advice. So one advice for young people who are looking to change their life around with regards to addiction. What piece or two of advice would you give them? And also professionals, now that you're seeing it from both sides, what advice might you have for young professionals who are just kind of getting started on the journey? So maybe we'll start with your thoughts for young people.
Yeah. I think that's tricky. I'm trying to think of kind of what I would say to myself, but also what I would say just in general. Mm-hmm. And I think it's that, like, for a young person, if I were speaking directly to one, I would tell him or her that they define success for themselves. And if they're looking to turn their lives around, it's them who defines success. It's not fair, and it doesn't respect you and who you are to allow someone in some position of power to tell you whether what you're doing is right or what you're doing is wrong. It has to be you who defines what success is and what turning your life around is, because there's people, a lot of people, when you're a young person, who are telling you, you have to walk this certain path or you have to do this in order to be successful. And I think that hearing that over and over and over is really not a fair experience for a young person, and not the best way to foster growth or healthy living.
That's a great piece of advice. That probably is applicable across the age spectrum, not just for young people.
Mm. Then professionals, advice for professionals.
Now that you are one.
Yeah. I think it's almost the same thing. It's the flip side of the coin, is that we need to constantly remind ourselves in this profession that we don't define success for our clients. And it's not us who are guiding a client, whether it be specific direction or leading questions for clients or taking the person-centered or strength-based approach, but then kind of adding our own agenda to it. Like, that's not how we achieve positive results. We almost have to let go of our definition of results or what is a positive result, because it is an individual experience. And for many people, what they see as thriving, or what they see as even just getting by, is wildly different from what we see. And we have to remember that and take a step back and respect that the client or the person we serve should be able to define their own measures of success.
Yeah, no, I think, again, that's a great piece of advice. And it's something I think that the system struggles the most with, is because we set these programs up and we need to have measurable success metrics to report back to society and funders. And we can sometimes get lost a little bit in the journey to get these outcomes in place, that we start to standardize everything. And as soon as you do that, you lose the ability to individualize. So I'm curious about your experience, because Shunda's actually been doing great outcome measurement using the OQ tool or a few other tools to actually measure some of the impact and to really gone to tailor it to the individual journey. What was your experience like as a client filling out these questionnaires? I believe it's every 2 weeks at Shunda. You guys would be filling out questionnaires on your experience and your levels of distress, and then they're talking about that with a therapist. I'm not sure exactly what the mechanism is for the use of that tool, but how do you balance that piece of needing to get outcomes and making them as individual as possible? Is there a process that you guys have up there that, that works really well?
I think that, well, first to address the first part, like my experience as a client there, this research tool wasn't actually in place when I was there, and I'm not, so I haven't really experienced it from the client end of things. Now, as someone working at Shunda, I see a lot of, I see almost just more weight being put on individualizing the program rather than focusing on the outcome. The outcome is, the outcome, the measurable outcome is secondary or almost in its own realm. Like the essence of Shunda that I experienced when I was there, which was that equality and that empowerment and all of that is still very present and focused on. And I don't know if outcomes as defined by the study in progress right now are even, like, there's no goal of hitting a certain outcome or anything like that. So it operates kind of as a secondary thing. Like if outcomes improve, that's like super cool and we did well, but retaining that core kind of essence of what Shunda is seems to be the focus.
Yeah, looking at the outcomes more as kind of feedback into the system or as a tool to be used as opposed to something to strive towards and to orient your efforts towards, I think seems to be the Enviro's approach anyway to outcomes and evaluation. And which is different. You know, some organizations are very much targeted at trying to improve their outcomes. And sometimes I think the client journey gets lost a little bit in that process.
Yeah. I feel like in some regards I experienced that through a practicum through a couple of practicums actually and working in environments where there was a lot more pressure for measurable outcomes and how challenging that is for social service agencies to balance this pressure for objective outcomes that are defined by like a funding organization that doesn't have a wealth of experience in a relevant field, and having to balance that with actually trying to work with clients and respect their right to self-determination and seeing how difficult that is in another agency, I can really appreciate what Enviros is doing and how they frame their research and how they frame outcomes.
Tell me a little bit about mindfulness-based experiences or the mindfulness as you experienced it at Shunda Creek. I know it's kind of popping out of that research as being one of the more powerful components of the process that clients go through up there. But what's your take on mindfulness, and do you have any mindfulness practices?
Oh, well, I think when I was there 5 years ago, and this was before the actual term got assigned to what Shunda did, or before people realized that what Shunda was doing was a lot of mindfulness stuff. And so a lot of my experience at Shunda with mindfulness was framed within the kind of at stake versus at risk model that Will Black, the resident genius and half pirate, kind of came up with, where one side of it is using old patterns in your life to try to cover your ass and to always just be doing kind of maintenance and survival. And the other side is staying right in the moment and looking at opportunities within the moment to grow and to help yourself and staying right where you are rather than just drawing from all these past experiences. And that's kind of what we worked off of. And my understanding is of being present or working from the past. Kind of over the course of the past 5 years, I've developed a more kind of an appreciation for who I am in the present. And when I'm grounded in the present moment, I feel like I'm at my best and I'm able to interact with people without any anxiety. And I'm able to think about my future without that like looming feeling of of terror that a lot of people in their early 20s feel. And as far as exercises or mindfulness practices now, through Shunda, I learned that I'm able to ground myself very well through physical activity. And I think that's common for a lot of people. So going into rock climbing or going into slacklining or hiking or something with the intent of being present and appreciating what's going on in my body and in my surroundings is kind of my main mindfulness practice right now. That's been working quite well for me. It's, I think, a large part of trying to remain grounded and remain in the present moment and in tune with really who you are in the now is an ongoing process. And it's something that I continue to work on and try to improve as I go.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting that you seem to gravitate towards, I mean, whitewater rafting and rock climbing are both, you know, very present moment activities that if you're not present for, can end quite badly. And so it's kind of forced mindfulness of these higher risk activities that you find yourself undertaking.
Yeah, that's actually... And something I noticed post-treatment is that a lot of the things I do enjoy the most or get the most out of are ones that facilitate that kind of mindful or at least just present, grounded frame of mind.
What, looking back to that transition period between leaving Shunda, I imagine there was still challenges in your life. Those don't go away just because you've been in treatment. What were the most challenging things about recovery or continue to be challenging about recovery that, because I think it's important that programs like Shunda, like Basecamp and like all these other programs, they become these kind of snapshots, you know, 90 days or however many days. Then oftentimes, unfortunately, clients get kind of shunted back into society. And I'm always curious about what kind of supports people find most useful and the challenges that they face so that we can start to address some of those challenges earlier in treatment. So what stands out for you from post Shunda from a what was challenging and what was helpful?
I think it shifted. Originally, what was challenging was almost like a culture shock transitioning from Shunda and the really incredible sense of community and open lines of communication and non-hierarchical power structure in between clients and staff and that shared journey and moving it back into kind of, I guess, more traditional society and losing a lot of that ability to process things and debrief things or frame things with someone else. And that was originally the hardest part because a lot of that was how we were able to, and I was able to manage cravings or manage negative thoughts or kind of self-defeating behaviors. So finding ways around that was kind of the biggest thing I was working on. And back when I was an early alumni from Shunda, the alumni program that we have now wasn't fully realized and wasn't really there to the extent that it is now. So a lot of the stuff I did was staying in touch with other clients who are willing to talk or staying in touch with staff by calling them to be able to kind of stay in that community and retain a bit of that Shunda culture. Now it seems like that challenge that a lot of early alumni face is being addressed by the alumni program, which is something that I'm so stoked about. Having two staff that are dedicated to meeting up with guys and helping guys kind of navigate the outside world is, I think, super important. And then later on, as things progressed and as I got, I'd say I'm in like kind of progressed out of early recovery with 5 years clean and a bit more into, I don't know if it's a term, but like medium-ish recovery. The focus has become less on this adapting to mainstream society, or at least maybe not adapting so much as just finding a way to manage mainstream society, yeah. And has shifted more internally. So looking at ongoing, for me, a big one is ongoing mental health challenges. And that's something that the majority of people in active addiction struggle with and people in recovery struggle with. And So for me, it's been using kind of the tools I learned in Shunda surrounding self-advocacy and being able to say, like, I deserve to be seen and heard, and my problem deserves to be discussed. And I now the big challenge is just pushing and accessing services that I need to maintain kind of mental hygiene, essentially.
What's next for you? You're at Shunda Creek, working back at Shunda. What are some of your longer term goals and plans?
Well, it's kind of changing. It's definitely changing. Originally, I was super stoked on, like, man, I just want to be like an addictions counselor at a wilderness treatment center. That'll be awesome. And then I realized, like, I actually like really want to expand what Shunda's doing and use a similar model and open a new treatment center somewhere where someone could use, or a province or a state could use services like Shunda's. And then I got into school and realized that that's all really cool, but now I'm really, actually I found out really stoked on policy reform within social services. So looking at originally policies and kind of northern communities and how services are delivered to remote towns and Nunavut and things like that, and looking at how we can improve the social service system there, because right now it's everyone's doing the best they can with the funds they have and with the system they have, but if there was a sustained push for policy reform, I believe that we could see so much more done to help people in these underserved communities. So then I was really stoked on that for a little while. But then I found out about this thing called social and solidarity economics, which is essentially kind of predicated on the idea that we globally operate essentially based on these neoliberal philosophies of supply and demand and boiling everything down to economics, and how if you aren't supplying a service or a product that society needs, then it's really your own fault for being poor, for having all these challenges. And there's a ton of research that points to this global system that we operate in right now being responsible for a ton of social issues and poverty and all of the kind of co-occurring challenges that come up with poverty and social inequality. And so social and solidarity economics takes that philosophy and then says, well, why do we have all of these social service programs that just teach people who've been rejected by the system how to adapt themselves to work within the system? Why are we just training people to work within a structure that is responsible for many of the hardships in their life? So it takes that and then goes a little bit further and says, well, why don't we create social services, or why don't we create businesses or things like that that operate on the same person-centered values that social work puts forward within their core list of ethics, and creating horizontally structured services that service users are also the service providers for, and that the funding comes from the service users, but the way it's structured builds on each person's strengths and capabilities so that the actual cost through funding is much lower. And I basically know enough about it right now to know that I know nothing about it, but it's really, really exciting and kind of something that I need to pursue through school. And so I might be stuck in school for longer than I intended to be, but that's okay.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that's an exciting place to be, to have all those colliding options of all good options of kind of future direction.
Yeah.
Exciting to hear. And so knowing that most of the folks listening to this podcast are probably professionals, haven't done an audience breakdown yet, so I don't actually know, but I'm assuming mostly professionals are getting their hands on the podcast. What advice would you have for them, or what one thing would you like them to do? You already gave them some advice, but what's one thing they can do today or they can do tomorrow that you think would be helpful in their practice?
I think locating themselves within their practice. So figuring out kind of trying to get back in touch with who they are and why they went into the social service field and how they're doing right now. If they're feeling a little burnt out, what they can do to care for themselves in that situation, or if they're feeling like they're losing touch with their reasons for entering into the social service field, like finding a way to reconnect with that, because we need that strong foundation of self before we can extend ourselves to other people. And a lot of the stuff, like, I have very limited experience, obviously, in the professional field, so like less than 5 years now through school and other work and now Shunda. But I feel like a lot of the instances when I've seen people start to forget the clients is because they're starting to forget why they're doing it and why they're so connected to kind of improving the human condition. And I think just taking that moment and self-reflecting and reconnecting with those core beliefs that we all have about humanity is probably the thing, the simplest and most effective thing they can do right now to improve their professional practice.
That is a phenomenal piece of advice. So thank you for that. I'm going to do that myself. And I'm going to encourage all of my staff to do that as well. Yeah, thank you so much for your time, Rob. I really appreciate it. I won't keep you any longer. But I did really enjoy connecting with you and really enjoyed the conversation. So I hope to meet you sometime in the near future.
Yeah, right on. Thanks very much, Jeff. I appreciate it.